CKUW.
What do you read, my lord?
Good morning. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada.
Support for CKUW is provided by Organic Planet, Winnipeg's only worker-owned organic grocery and vegan deli, located at 877 Westminster Avenue, serving Wolseley and Winnipeg for over 30 years.
What do you read, my lord?
Words.
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 Good morning, I'm Susan Hubert, and this is Bookworm on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, the show where I talk mainly about books that I have reviewed, I interview authors, and sometimes just talk about the books. But either way, this is a chance for you to find out more about what's available in the book world.
Good morning and welcome to the show for Tuesday, December 30th, 2025. I hope you had a good Christmas and a good week. So today I'll be talking about two books again, but I'll start with a little bit of news. So according to CTV News, an investigation is going on now after 10 train cars derailed early on Sunday morning near the Jubilee Rapid Transit Station. At about 3 a.m. that day, crews responded to a report that the cars had come off their rails, with eight tipped over on their sides and the others remaining upright. According to an email from Canadian National Railway officials, the cars were not carrying dangerous goods, and there were no injuries or leaks. Winnipeg Fire and Paramedic Service personnel were also on the scene. Then in international news, according to the BBC, the government of Nepal has announced that it will end a campaign to encourage climbers on Mount Everest to bring their garbage back with them. The scheme required climbers to pay a deposit of $4,000, which would be refunded if they brought back at least 8 kilograms of waste with them. But the climbers have mostly been bringing back garbage from the lower camps rather than from the higher camps, where the problem is worse. Experts estimate that the mountain peak is covered with about 50 tons of waste, mostly around the higher camps. Most climbers spend about 6 weeks on the mountain, becoming acclimatized to each level before they attempt the next part of their journey. So that's the news for today. And then in weather, according to the weather from the Winnipeg-Richardson International Airport, it's currently minus 12 degrees, and the forecast for today, Tuesday, December 30th, is minus 8 degrees with periods of light snow. Then overnight, minus 20 degrees with periods of light snow again. Then for Wednesday, December 31st, minus 20 degrees with periods of light snow. Then overnight, minus 23 degrees with periods of snow. For Thursday, January 1st, periods minus 15 with periods of snow. Then overnight, minus 21 degrees and clear. For Friday, January 2nd, minus 15 degrees and sunny, then overnight minus 16 degrees and cloudy. For Saturday, January 3rd, minus 14 degrees and cloudy, then overnight minus 17 degrees with a 60% chance of flurries. So that's the weather for the next few days. And then in events, it's time now for CQW's event guide. From concert and club listings to community announcements, we help you keep in touch with what's going on in Winnipeg. So for the first one, Canada Stars on Ice 2026 tour. So that's celebrating Canadian Olympic figure skating at Canada Life Centre on May 6th, and Canada's top Olympic hopefuls join icons Elvis Stoiko for a must-see tour directed by Kurt Browning. Tickets have been on sale for over a month now, but they're available at Ticketmaster.ca. So we're looking forward to the 2026 Winter Olympics, and Canada's top figure skaters are preparing to represent their country's rich history at the Winter Games. So this event will bring together the most celebrated skaters of the country, past, present, and future. So that's one event. And then one that I mention quite frequently, Community 204 Walks. And that's every Friday, and meet at 5:30 p.m. at 605 Main Street. And items needed are water bottles, snacks, and sandwiches. So if you're interested in touring the community and seeing what's going on, join the group for a walk every Friday at 5:30 p.m. at 605 Main Street. Those are a few of the events listed in the guide. If you'd like to have your event listed as well, please drop by CQUW, email us at CQUW@uwinnipeg.ca, or call 204-786-9782. And now, in keeping with the theme of Nepal, which I mentioned a little bit earlier, I've talked about this book before, but this is called Alpine Rising, Sherpas, Baltis, and the Triumph of Local Climbers in the Greater Ranges, by Bernadette MacDonald. So this is Mountaineer's Books and is 269 pages. So many people know of the achievements of famous explorers who scaled the heights of Mount Everest or K2, but what about the local climbers who made it all possible? In Alpine Rising, Sherpas, Baltis, and the Triumph of Local Climbers in the Greater Ranges, Bernadette MacDonald shows the importance of Nepalese, Tibetan, Indian, and Pakistani porters in helping climbers to reach the summits of these mountains. The book begins with an explanation of some of the terms found in this account. For example, Sherpa is not a job title, it doesn't mean porter, but it's rather a Nepali ethnic group which includes large numbers of climbers. Balti refers to another ethnic group known for skill and endurance in scaling the Himalayan peaks. Throughout the book, the author uses the term porter to refer to the people of these and other communities who have carried food, climbing equipment, and other supplies for the foreigners climbing the Himalayan mountains. Much of the book deals with the efforts of local climbers to gain recognition for their accomplishments. The assistance of these local climbers, has been vital as they have gone ahead to set hooks in the rocks for foreign climbers to use or to establish camps where the climbers could rest before continuing their journey. And one thing that the climbers need to do is to become acclimatized to the amount of oxygen in the air, since oxygen up on the mountains is considerably lower than it is on the ground. However, these porters have often received little credit for their contributions. The author touches on many issues as she describes the work of local climbers. For example, she notes that while the porters could receive relatively high wages by climbing with groups of foreigners, they also put their lives at risk. MacDonald includes accounts of climbers being severely injured or even dying in the attempt to reach the top of these mountains. Losing fingers and toes to frostbite is a constant threat, as was the possibility of falling off a cliff or into a crevasse. This book presents a vivid picture of the challenges that Himalayan porters faced and of their struggle to balance the high wages that they could receive with the dangers of the work. The author includes quotations from interviews with some of these porters and gives accounts of what happened to some of them after they were no longer able to climb the mountains. Political and social issues are also part of the story. While climbers from some countries were very generous, for example, others expected the porters to rely on their own resources to a far greater extent, even when those resources were inadequate. The concerns, for instance, while the French would tend to share their food with the porters, the English tended not to do that. So then the porters had to supply their own food in addition to guiding the climbers up the mountain. And then there's also the concern surrounding climbers from Germany during the Nazi era, and that's one that the author discusses. Whether the porters had any knowledge of what was going on in Germany at the time, in the 1930s, or if they had any concern with that. So the author doesn't really give an answer to that question, but he raises the issue of what people do in that kind of situation. Many readers, whether they're climbers or not, are likely to find alpine rising interesting. Even for me, since I'm very much afraid of heights, I found it interesting and kind of challenging and enjoyable. Some readers might want more detailed information on the local climbers and their communities, and others might wish for a fuller explanation of the motivation behind the push for Westerners to climb these mountains. However, others will enjoy the insights that they gain into one way that people test the limits of their strength and endurance. Alpine Rising is a well-written and easy-to-read book, and many people will enjoy it. Then a bit of a biography of the author. Bernadette MacDonald has written 12 books on mountaineering, including Winter 8000 and Brotherhood of the Rope, the biography of Charles Houston. Her biographical work, Art of Freedom, won the Boardman Tasker Prize and the Banff Mountain Literature Award. She was the founding vice president of mountain culture at the Banff Center and is an honorary member of the Himalayan Club and the Polish Mountaineering Club. Her background is in English literature and music. Currently, she lives in Banff, Alberta and Naramata, British Columbia. So if you're interested in mountaineering or just finding out about why people do what they do when they climb mountains, this is Alpine Rising, Sherpas, Balties, and the Triumph of Local Climbers in the Greater Ranges by Bernadette MacDonald. That's Mountaineers Books, and that's 269 pages. So now maybe I'll play a little bit of music. And so this is part of Haydn's Symphony No. 26 from an album called Haydn and Mozart. And Haydn's Symphony No. 26. I hope you'll enjoy it.
Thank you.
So welcome back. That was Haydn Symphony No. 26 and the first section of that. And that was from an album called Haydn Symphony No. 26 and 86. Then Mozart Violin Concerto No. 3. So I hope you enjoyed that. So before the break, I was talking about a book called Alpine Rising, about various climbers and especially the porters who helped carry the various equipment and goods for the foreigners who had come. So it's quite an interesting book, even if, well, I guess some parts of it made me cringe a little bit as the author talked about various people falling or having accidents of other kinds. But it's a very interesting book, and so I would encourage you to read it if you like that kind of thing. Then the next one I'd like to talk about is called My Privilege, My Responsibility by Sheila North, who's a local person here from Manitoba. And that's published by Great Plains Publications and is 202 pages. So here's my review. Social issues can seem theoretical and distant until they are connected to real people and shown as part of what makes members of the community who they are. As former Manitoba Kinawatawi Okamekanak MKO Grand Chief Sheila North writes in her memoir, My Privilege, My Responsibility, the direction of her life is the result of family history, the struggles of being Indigenous in Canada, and her personal choices, both good and bad. Together, these influences have made her what she is now. At times, the family story in My Privilege, My Responsibility might almost read like a case study of everything that has gone wrong for Indigenous people in Canada. The author's grandmother attended a residential school, and Sheila North's childhood in the Bonabonabe Cree Nation included food insecurity and inconsistent access to amenities such as running water. The community where she lived was subject to outbreaks of diseases like tuberculosis. Meanwhile, limited access to the area in winter by ice roads left the people isolated from the outside world, which was an advantage during COVID-19, but otherwise has been a problem as the community has dealt with many difficult issues. Despite the struggles that she experienced while growing up, the author remembers her upbringing with gratitude. Her parents were hospitable and caring advocates in the community, showing their family how to live a good life. Even with a strong beginning, North went through many traumatic experiences, including an assault when she was still young, and later a marriage that almost crushed her. Yet North was still able to learn from what had happened to her, and to take these insights into her campaign when she ran for the position of Grand Chief of the MKO, a position that she held for 3 years. She later ran for the leadership of the Assembly of First Nations, although she was unsuccessful in that campaign. The second half of the memoir describes many of the insights the author has gained into a variety of issues affecting the people of her community and beyond, including the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and the Me Too movement. My Privilege, My Responsibility is an engaging book with many insights into the issues that that Indigenous people face, as I mentioned, told through the perspective of someone who has witnessed or experienced many of these struggles. While the first half of the book is much more personal than the second part, the two segments fit together quite well to provide readers with many valuable insights into the author's life and her community. As you might have learned if you've listened to me quite often, I'm an editor and proofreader as well, and so the editing is inconsistent at times, but the book is a good choice for anyone looking for an interesting and informative memoir. And a bit of a biography of the author. Sheila North is a journalist and activist currently living in Winnipeg. She served for 3 years as Grand Chief of the MKO and later ran as a candidate for the position of National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, as I mentioned earlier. Much of her work has revolved around around Indigenous issues such as the missing and murdered Indigenous women hashtag. She was named one of Chatelaine Magazine's Top 30 Women of 2015 and has been nominated for a Gemini Award. So this book was My Privilege, My Responsibility by Sheila North, and it's published by Great Plains Publications and has 202 pages. So you might wonder how these two books that I was talking about fit together, and in a way they don't, but in a way you could think of, like I said, with Alpine Rising, there's the issue of foreigners coming in and putting a lot of pressure on the local people. And then with, I guess, for Indigenous people in Canada, there's always a little bit of a tension, or often a little bit of a tension between them, or sometimes a lot of tension between them and the people who have come in the past few hundred years. So then you can look at it that way, that there's some correlation with that, and also with struggles. I guess with the Alpine Rising, it's struggles that people take on themselves, since no one forces them to climb Mount Everest or K2. But then with the Indigenous groups here, a lot of the troubles are things that have come through what's happened to them over the last few hundred years, and how people have responded to their needs and to what needs to be done to help them, or to help them help themselves. So then these two books are available in various places as well, and probably McNally Robinson and other bookstores, or you can also, I guess with Sheila North, you can always catch up on what she's been doing in the past while, since she's still active in the community and still working on finding out how to help her own people and how to deal with the traumas of her life as well. And so then she can help them to, well, I guess everyone needs help to deal with whatever struggles they're dealing with, whether they're imposed from outside or from within. And I think one of the things also with the new year coming is that for many people, climbing Mount Everest is a challenge that they might want to take on. It's something I would never, ever, ever do. But for some people, that would be kind of the pinnacle of a physical and emotional and mental challenge, because people have to be very much mentally prepared to take on that challenge as well as physically prepared. It doesn't really help terribly much to be physically prepared if they get too scared of a ridge as they're climbing, or if they don't like the snow or something like that. And I guess with Sheila North as well, she's had various changes in her life and taken on various responsibilities that were maybe challenging, but that also helped her to deal with what was going on in her life. So if you're interested in thinking about challenges and what people can do to both to face their challenges and to come up with better ways of dealing with what comes up in their lives, these two books could be good ones to read. So this is Alpine Rising, Sherpas, Baltis, and the Triumph of Local Climbers in the Greater Ranges by Bernadette MacDonald, and then My Privilege, My Responsibility by Sheila North. And the first book is published by Mountaineers Books, and it's 269 pages. And the second one is published by Great Plains Publications, and it's 202 pages. So I'm coming to the end of the show for today, but I hope you'll consider these two books and or some of the other ones that I've talked about in the past. And for everyone, I hope you'll have a good new year, and that you'll have some challenges, but also find ways to find solutions for them. So stay tuned for Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, which is coming up next, and thanks for listening. Have a great week.
What do you read, my lord?
Words. Words.
Words.
This is the end of Bookworm on CQW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg for today, and I hope that you have been inspired to pick up a new book to read. Be sure to tune in next week for more discussions about books, and thanks for listening.
Support of CKUW is provided by the Western Cultural Center. Did you know that we now offer season passes for our fall and spring season? It's a great deal. To reflect the city we're in, we program music from anywhere in the world and in any language because we want everyone to feel welcome at the WEC and in Winnipeg.
CKUW 95.9, Winnipeg.
Located on the first floor of Portage Place Shopping Center, Studio 393 is a come-as-you-are drop-in studio space for people aged 13 to 29, run by Graffiti Art Programming. The program curriculum is shaped by participants focusing on music production, recording, DJing, creative writing, and podcasting. In addition to a highly qualified staff of practicing artists, Studio 393 also receives local, national, and international guest artists and professionals to facilitate workshops and mentor aspiring and emerging artists. We also offer personal and professional development opportunities. Studio 393 is now open 4 to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday and 1 to 3 p.m. on Saturdays. For more information, please contact info@graffitigallery.ca or go to www.graffitigallery.ca.
Hi, my name's Joan Reno. I'm the host of Sunny Road every Friday from 10 a.m. to 11. From a dimly lit juke joint to a country field and everything in between, meet me on the Sunny Road.
It's time, meet me on the Sunny Road.
Tune in to the Island Vibe Show with DJ Viseman every Sunday night, 10 p.m. till 12 midnight Central Standard Time, right here on CKUW 95.9 FM. Get us at ckuw.ca. Get me at islandvibes.org.